Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is August 26th, 2017, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Begging, and we have a guest skeptic, Dr. Richard Bucata. Rick is the medical director for the Center for Medical Education. He started Emergency Medical Abstracts back in 1977. Yes, you heard that correctly, 40 years ago. He's also a clinical professor of emergency medicine, Los Angeles County, USC Medical Center. It's my great honor to welcome Rick to the SGEM.
Ken, I made it. I made it. I'm sliding into home plate. Am I the last of the legends, Ken?
We save the best to last, I think.
I'm honored to be included, that's for sure. You've got a list of quite notable people, and so I'm very appreciative. Thanks so much.
Well, this is the final episode of the summer SGEM series called Legends of Emergency Medicine. And these episodes were designed to highlight some of the pioneers and leaders of our specialty. The hope is that these episodes will give the next generation of emergency physicians access to some of the superstars in our field. Now, each legend was asked to pick their own theme music for the episode. So, Rick, why did you pick Begging by Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons?
Well, Ken, I'm not really a begging. The words, actually, I like the song very much, but the issue here is that is one of about 25 songs that were part of the songs included in the Jersey Boys musical. I don't know if I need to a 12-step program here or not, but I have seen that play 13 times. It's been at the Paris Hotel in Las Vegas, and I've done so many courses there, and I've had so many opportunities to see it. And that play means so much to me because I'm a contemporary of everything that that play is about. And so to be really candid, over the times I've been there, there's been a few little tears brought up by that play because it's so nostalgic for me. And so I picked this song because it is one of the rock'em sock'em songs in the show, but I'm not begging for anything.
Well, I had the privilege of making the pilgrimage to see the show with you and sat and watched the whole performance. And I couldn't believe how many songs I knew, but didn't know that they were by Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. They had hit after hit after hit.
Yeah, you know, I always felt the necessity to take somebody with me. I would beg people to go with me because I thought it would really look strange if I went alone. So I never did go alone, but I've had some people go two and three times kicking and screaming just so I could have some company in there and not look like a real wacko.
It was funny when I got there, and I think the usher there recognized you, and it was like, oh, hello, Mr. Bucata, welcome back.
Well, I did have an opportunity to meet some of the folks that were ushers. They only do it at night. Their only job at the show is to do that part. They know all of the players. They're fascinating people. Some of their backgrounds have been in the theater, things that they've done in the past. So everybody's got their story. And so I did make it a point to try to kind of meet some of them.
Well, sadly, the show, I think, has ended its run at the Paris in Las Vegas.
Yes, I was really, really bummed. I was there about 3 or 4 days before it ended, and it was sick. I was thinking about going back to Las Vegas to see the last show. The last show had Frankie Valli and all of the producers of the show. Those are the guys who put up the money. And there was a bunch of real old fat people who came out who were the producers of it. They also had the cast. It was kind of neat. But one of the things that happened is people took their cameras and iPhones and put it up on YouTube, the end of the show. That special part. So I did get to see it from a distance.
Well, it's hard to believe that none of the listeners do not know some of the legends we've featured on this summer series of the SGEM. And that's why one of the reasons I'm asking each guest to tell the audience something non-medical about them before we get into the formal part of the show. Now, other legends have talked about music, literature, scuba diving, and even chasing solar eclipses. But what does Rick Bucata like to do when he's not educating a generation of emergency medicine providers?
You know, this has been the hardest question because you fed me these questions in advance. And so I have no excuse for not giving a brilliant, thoughtful answer. And I know that I'm supposed to sound like a well-rounded person that's got all kinds of interest, like, you know, Jerry Hoffman plays the piano and Diane Birnbaumer chases the eclipses. And to tell you the truth, I'm not a very interesting person. I have grandchildren I love to see. I frankly, you know, it's really sick. I love my work. I work with my brother, my sister, my two kids. We do projects together. I love to read emergency medicine. I'm a mess. I mean, yeah, I have a wife and we've been married for 47 ridiculous years. We do things together. We did our little road trip earlier today. She's a lawyer, and so she does her thing, and she's getting to the age where they're about to throw her out of the firm. So we're really going to be in trouble because she and I are going to be home together all the time. But I'd like to say that, you know, I do, you know, astrophysics problems on my free time and the like. But to tell you the truth, I am what I do, unfortunately. And I understand that the negatives associated with that. But when you do what you do and you don't view it as work, it's kind of like hard because I got to like other things better. And, you know, I'd like to say all these great, wonderful things that I accomplished, but Ken, you know me, I am what I do.
Well, you're passionate about what you do and you're a passionate medical educator. So isn't it wonderful? Because we're always telling people, find your passion and you'll never work a day in your life. But if we can get a little technical with you, it would be WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get with Rick Bucata. What you see is what you get. He is that generous, kind, hardworking guy who absolutely loves medical education. But I did pick up on something, and you said, well, you know, I'm not that much of a rounded guy, but that reminded me, aren't you an avid bowler? Aren't you some kind of legend when it comes to bowling? Don't you make a pilgrimage back home to meet up with your family to do a bowlerama?
Well, actually, in my high school years, which were just a few years ago, I was on the all-city team for the Catholic high schools. I was on all-city. I used to work in a bowling alley when I was about, when I was in high school, I worked in a bowling alley. I worked actually in two of them. And I was in a men's league. And in the men's league, I had an average, and I was, you know, I was 16. I had an average of 186. That was my highest average. I used to bowl a lot. I used to shoot pool a lot. I used to be in the bowling alley. I mean, working. I used to fix the pin setters in the back in the evenings. I had an office created out of cases of bowling pins. And I did that for a better part of the bunch of years. And I also worked in construction, built swimming pools back in Philadelphia. I was a newspaper boy at in sixth or seventh grade. You know, I've just had jobs. I've never been without a job or two. And so it's kind of like, that's just been the way we did it in my family.
I was going to say, that's just the way you roll or the way you bowl. But you did put out one other little tidbit that reminded me of something else that I think you're some kind of expert at, some kind of connoisseur. So you ready for this unprepared question, Rick?
I can handle it.
Describe the perfect Philly cheesesteak.
Oh, well, you know, you have to be in Philly to have the perfect Philly cheesesteak. It has not got the whiz on it, all that crap. That is not the real McCoy. You know, it's just got a Amoroso roll. It's got nice chopped up thin steak. It can't be gristly or anything like that. And you have to have white American cheese on it. That's it. No sauce, grilled onions, that's fine. But no sauce, no nothing. And it's got to be Amoroso roll. That's it. And actually, there's some places out here in California that do it just like that, and they are good. But it's, you know, it's, I was just back in Philadelphia about 2 weeks ago, and you have to go to Wawa to get your Wawa hoagie. And then there's right beside that place is one of the places we get our cheesesteaks. But, you know, let me diverge just a little bit. You know about our annual family thing, where we have all of our family members, our nieces, nephews, aunts, uncles, grandparents. My mother, who's 95, goes. That's beginning in a week in Virginia Beach. We rent a house. This house, I saw a picture of it. It has three sub-zero refrigerators. Three. It sleeps about 40 people. It's on the beach in a place called Sandbridge. And we've gone every year for at least 25 years, more like 30 years, for a family thing. And the family, they all want to go. Even though the kids now are in their 30s, everybody drops what they're doing and goes for this week of family bonding, in which we eat large bushels of crustaceans, otherwise known as Merlin blue crabs. And that's coming up. So I'm looking forward to that. And the other thing is, independent of that, is you and I are going to get together in 2 days to do the third of the National Emergency Medicine Board Review courses. And that's it. All we're going to see, like all of these doctors with looking the deer in the headlight look, because they're taking their exam and they're all scared to death.
Well, I'm looking forward to meeting you again, but do you remember where we first met?
Actually, I think I do. Yeah, it was at ASAP when we were exhibiting, and there was, I don't know whether it was a lot, there were a ton of people around, a ton of people. And I don't know whether it was just because our booth was so fantastically popular, or there was just a ton of people around walking up and down the hallway. But I remember you kind of pushing your way through the crowd kind of thing, kind of coming up to the front. And I think Jerry was there, but I know that I was. And you introduced yourself, and you made it really clear that you were a fan of the abstracts, and that you had been listening, and that you were, your enthusiasm was just exuding. You were exuding it. Yeah, I think that was a good word, exuding enthusiasm. And then there was a gap from when we first met then to when we started getting involved with each other in the last maybe three or 4 years.
Yeah, my first memory, besides listening to you and Jerry banter on the abstracts, was attending your live performances at ASAP.
Yeah, each year we would give two-hour sessions where we would cover about, I don't know, 25 papers in each session. And we would do it just like we did the abstracts. It was just live, and we just picked the papers that we kind of liked. And Jerry never liked the papers I picked, and I never liked the papers he picked. And we do that, and we're doing it again this year. We've been doing it, I don't know, 20 years, long time.
Well, I remember it was really hard to actually get into these ASAP performances. I mean, these were sold out events, standing room only, people trying to watch you and Jerry perform. And it, for me, it was like watching The Muppet Show. And I don't know if listeners remember, but there was always these two guys sitting in the balcony on The Muppet Show editorializing the performances. And you and Jerry would find that perfect blend between education and entertainment. You were that hardworking frontline community doctor, and he was that ivory tower academic.
Well, that was kind of our shtick. You know, I honestly don't remember when he and I began recording together. It had to be at least 25 years ago, at least. But we did it, and we never missed an issue. Every frickin' month we did it. I look forward to everyone. I look forward to. I was like the Dalmatian running after the fire engine. I wanted to be on that fire engine and do it each month. And so whether we did it live, we usually did it together. We started alternating each other's houses, going back and forth. And it was fun. It was fun. I mean, I don't want to call that work. Yeah, we did have to prepare, and we had to write our notes and things like that. But I must admit, I was kind of forced to do it. But a lot of emergency medicine got jammed into my head over those 25 years.
Well, it's hard to believe that I went from a listener to a fanboy to a faculty member on the courses to ultimately being the moderator and abstractor for EMA.
Well, we're absolutely blown away that the CAPE Educator of the Year Award was given to you a couple of years ago. You and you now with us, you have kind of become integral to everything we do, not only our recordings, but our courses. You know our family, we know your family kind of thing. This is kind of like, I think it's terrific. I think it's absolutely terrific. And we are so proud that you have hooked up with us.
Well, this is not about me. It's about you. So I'd like to get to the formal part of the SGEM Extra. Legends of emergency medicine. So we're going to go through five things, because five is my favorite number, to find out your thoughts as a leader, an innovator, and disruptor of emergency medicine. Is that okay?
I got my five questions here. Now, do I have to get it 4 out of 5 right?
To pass. You do have to get 4 out of 5. Yep, to pass. All right. So the first question, what's the biggest positive change you have seen in emergency medicine over your career?
Well, I did write a note down here. It isn't that our doctors are any smarter than they were. I think that what we're doing that is smarter is we're staffing smarter. We use PAs now and NPs to help out so that we have the right person doing the right job. We have scribes. We have terrific technology. When I first started out, there was like a CT. It was barely existing when I first started it out, barely. Now we have ultrasound, MRI. It makes our job so much easier to do now that we have this extraordinary technology. So smarter staffing and better technology, I think, are the two that I see as the positives.
Isn't that interesting? You're the first legend, I think, to have mentioned the other members in the emergency medicine team that provide care to the patients that are walking through the door or arriving through that ambulance entrance. So I really think that's interesting. Question number two, though, is what's the biggest negative change you've seen in emergency medicine?
Well, at least right now, I would list EMRs as a big negative. Slower care and no better care. You can't show me that it's better. We're not using decision support well at all. That's the saving grace of the electronic medical record is the smart use of decision support so that our doctors are and clinicians are on the same page with regards to what's the most efficient, cost-effective, evidence-based workup for PEs and low-risk chest pain, et cetera, because variability in physician practice remains embarrassingly huge. So I think EMRs, until they get better, are right now a pain in the rump. I think we were moving in the right direction with Obamacare, but now obviously we're in limbo here. We need Medicare for everybody. It's ridiculous that it's just embarrassing, Ken, that our country is the only westernized country that doesn't provide care for everybody. And now we got this ridiculous administration who wants to backpedal on this. We just in the United States crossed the $10,000 a year barrier. That's what we're spending, $10,000 a year. You're spending $6,000. Your results are better than ours. What they say is, well, you got to wait 6 months to see a neurosurgeon up there. And, you know, I don't think that that's actually true. But if you spend $6,000 and we spend $10,000, we should be able to provide incredible care for every soul in this country. And we're so screwed up.
I don't want to get too political, so I'm going to move on to question 3. And this one's a tough one because you have done so much. And this question is about what contribution that you have made to emergency medicine that you're most proud of. But of course, I was doing my research on this. And I mean, besides emergency medical abstracts, which I think most people know about, you also do primary care medical abstracts, risk management monthly, ED leadership monthly. And then on top of that, I think you've had half a dozen courses, from the emergency medicine board review course to the family medicine board review course. We do the emergency medicine and acute care series. There's a boot camp. There's an advanced boot camp, innovations in ED management. I think the shorter list would be, what don't you do in medical education?
Well, it's basically I'm chronically overextended, but the driver is to do projects that have found a little niche that nobody else was in that people think we do well. And so when I get an attaboy over something like the board review course or one of our other projects, Risk Management Monthly or something like that. That's what drives me. I like to find things where people haven't been doing them. There is a need that it be done and that we try to do it. But, you know, what we do is kind of like baseball. I mean, we don't get a hit every time we're at the plate, but we have a lot of fun doing this. I'm overextended, but a lot less than I used to be. Before, I used to be the director of a department. As you know, Emergency Medical Abstracts is going to be picked up by mail for the October issue. So we're not, that part of it I won't be doing. And frankly, you and six of your colleague emergency physicians were doing the abstracts for the last 2 or 3 years. So I've had a lot of weight taken off my shoulder. And so I get antsy about what's the next project we're going to come up with.
So can you pick one thing that you're most proud of then, or is it the whole concept?
Well, of all of the things, I'm absolutely unequivocally most proud of Emergency Medical Abstracts. Although, to be very, very candid, I would be very surprised if most of the physicians listening to you know anything about it.
Well, they sure will after this episode.
Well, we weren't, you know, it was of a different generation kind of thing. We were among the first audios. Now there's podcasts. There's probably 15 emergency medicine podcasts. They're all free. Mel's hit it out of the park. We used to support him. We used to do all his subscription stuff, do all of the printing of his material, press his discs, all of that stuff, send his bills. So we have a long relationship together, and I'm really, really happy the way that this is going. But EMA is kind of like, of all the things, that has been kind of the most gratifying, I think.
So let's pick Rick Bucata's brain. What advice would you give to someone who's interested in pursuing a career in emergency medicine?
Well, I think emergency medicine is an absolutely fantastic specialty. The concept of trying to be the master of the first 2 hours of anything that walks in the door is intellectually overwhelming. And yet that's what we try to do. Our specialty is a specialty in breath, where it's pediatrics, it's orthopedics, it's neurology. We're trying to become experts in the emergencies of all of these specialties and be, frankly, as good as, you know, the pediatrician at it, or the orthopedist at it, in terms of recognizing the spinal infarct by the neurologist. We're diagnosticians. Once we get the diagnosis down, we can look up the treatment in a book. But we're making diagnosis hour after hour after hour, patient after patient after patient. So that's kind of the core of what we do. I think it's a fabulous intellectually challenging specialty. But I think you have to be realistic. For the vast majority of physicians, it's shift work. And you have to remember that much of it is evenings, nights, weekends, holidays. And you have to kind of, when you first start out, you look at, I want to crack chests, I want to intubate patients, et cetera, et cetera. But when it all settles down, 80% of the patients that you see in the emergency department are going to go home. 20% will be the tough ones that get admitted. And so... you have to be realistic about it. There's all this stuff about burnout, and we need to be aware of all the techniques to try to limit burnout. You know, you want to be a lawyer every day doing wills and trusts. I mean, we are not unique. So there's a whole bunch of techniques and I won't go into those, but you just have to be aware that there are pros and cons to going into emergency medicine. But the pros certainly outweigh, in my view, the cons.
Well, I mentioned already that this whole thing started back in 1977, 40 years. So I don't want you to look back anymore. I want you to look forward, and I want you to look forward to the next 10 years. Where do you see emergency medicine being in 10 years?
Well, you know, that question is asked recurrently in the past. And if I look at the last 40 years, I don't expect to see huge changes in the next 10. We'll always have lots and lots of patients to see. There'll always be the question about having enough resources to take care of them. I know that there'll be continued growth in the use of PAs and NPs in the department so that we have the right person for the right job. I know electronic medical records are going to get better and help us finally do a better job at seeing patients rather than just encumbering us with being data capture specialists, which doctors, you know, you've got the wrong person doing it. I mean, we're the most expensive people in the department, not because of our salaries, but because of the fact that if we could see one more patient in an hour, you know, what does that generate for the hospital? I think that's kind of where it's going. I don't see any huge kind of, oh my God, breakthroughs going on here at all. And largely because there haven't been in the last 40 years.
All right. Well, is there anything else that you want to discuss?
I did want to say thanks so much for doing this and acknowledging the five or six of us that you've chosen. And I want to acknowledge you. I really am so pleased with the relationship that has transpired between us. And I'm so proud of what you're doing. Being a skeptic is kind of like, you're kind of in Jerry, you're taking Jerry's spot. I mean, you know, the baton is being passed to you in terms of being a skeptic. And I think that you've done a terrific job at it. Your knowledge base in terms of understanding the literature is really strong. And so I'm really happy that you're doing so well in emergency medicine in terms of your recognition of being a leader and an up-and-coming leader of our specialty. I know I stumbled around through that, but the fact of the matter is I have a really fond place in my heart for you, Ken.
Well, thank you very much. I wasn't expecting that at all, and that's a big mantle to wear as a skeptic. But I also feel like I'm a blend of that community doctor like you are, because you know what? I was on shift yesterday. I'm going to be on shift next week. I'm a frontline community doctor, still seeing patients, which I love, but I'm also passionate about the literature and evidence-based medicine. But that was very kind. And one thing I've learned over the last few years is that you have made me feel like part of the Bucata family.
Oh, you are. You are a part. We adopt, everybody who works with us is either a relative or we adopt them. And so we'll be submitting papers on your adoption in the very near future.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the SGEM and sharing your story, Rick.
Thanks, Ken, for having me on the show. It's a great opportunity, and I'm very appreciative.
Now, I did mention that you started this all back in 1977. That means it's been four decades. That's right, four decades. It's your 40th anniversary. Now, I went back and looked this up. First anniversary is paper, which is kind of interesting because of the abstracts and how they used to come out in paper. The fifth is wood. I don't think you ever put out the abstracts in a wood format. 10 is aluminum. 25 is silver. But do you know what the 40th anniversary is, Rick?
No, I don't.
It's ruby. So I'm going to send you something ruby red to say thanks for edumacating me, helping me pass my EM exam, and inspiring me to be a podcaster.
Well, I'll look forward to it. Something ruby is coming towards me.
That's right. Now, this summer, SGEM Extra Series, Legends of Emergency Medicine, has been an amazing journey for me. It started with my EBM guru, Andrew, beam me up, Worcester. And then we had Diane, the brick house of education, Birnbaumer. And this was followed by the godfather of FOMED, Joe Lex. Ian Steele, the rule guy himself out of Ottawa, was the fourth legend. We even had the doctor who wrote the book on emergency medicine, Judy Tintinelli. Last week, it was the original skeptic and Renaissance man, Jerry Hoffman. And now I get to finish with someone who's inspired me, taught many, saved thousands of lives, and established our specialty in the House of Medicine. Rick Bucata, I salute you.
Wow. Don't know really what to say. You're very kind. Appreciate it so much.
Well, you know what you can say? You can say the SGEM tagline.
I got it. Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it from the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next time.
I'm there.